He has no consciousness of his short-lived steps, and this, thanks to his proposed annihilation, will be accelerated perhaps for your own civilization, dying at the hands of your own brothers. Why? Because even when a human being possesses the capacity for reflection, he is always preponderantly on the offensive, disposed to repel any aggression at whatever cost. The human being of your world is full of fear, fear of living, of suffering, of dying. Those weapons not only are bringing an end to those who have the misfortune of coming in contact with them, but also to those who still are not born. Not only the attacked will succumb, but also the attacker who has contact with those weapons will die. For such, the aggressor and the victim are sentenced to suffer the same effects by those who have developed the chemical weapons. Chapter 14. A suicidal humanity. Is this the most deadly? I asked Li A. The most dangerous and the most sadistic, because it will bring the end of humanity slowly. It makes us sad to know that while the Earth humans are attacking each other with chemical weapons, another world, situated on the outside or your solar system, also is planning to attack you with weapons and chemical reactions. In my world, could we impede the proliferation of these weapons? You cannot impede them if the Earth human will not give up his hate. You cannot induce the human being to his full consciousness, nor teach him to live intensely the transitory cycle of existence that you have reserved, nor can we teach him that he is not the owner of any of that for which he fights, and that at least it would be preferable to do something for his humanity, always in majority ascendant. He has damaged his own humanity much and continues to do so. The only thing that can settle his bellicosity is death. Death. I am not here, Professor, to speak of the destruction of the Earth human being. I am in your world to tell you that you should fight for your opportunity to live. Li A. I don't know if I admire you or love you, or to try to forget you, but if you can fight for the peace of a world that is not even yours, there must be an immensely valiant place in the depths of your heart. We had arrived at the city, and I left Li A at the entrance to the highway, in an uninhabited park. I returned alone. Immensely alone in the profundities of a hostile world, submerged in an ocean shared by other planets. In the immensities of distances never measured before by man. If we persisted in thinking that the fact of having been born made us owners of the universe, until a more powerful civilization than ours comes to conquer us, thanks to the false pride with which we surround ourselves, we may deserve what we get. From Chapter 15. Another Witness. I watched with desperation the passage of what might be my last years. Time was passing too fast for me. At my age I had learned which were the values of life. Every instant, every second, every minute passed with such rapidity that I seriously doubted that many of the projects planned today could be completed tomorrow. My relation with Li A, though having filled my mind with doubts, nevertheless, had filled my existence with longing. A longing that, for what I wanted to fulfill, would require some time. After these many months I still doubted that my chats with Li A should be brought to light. Today I see no obstacle for which they should be hidden anymore. I asked Li A to give me proofs, something that was beyond the knowledge of any scientist of Earth. You shall have it, she told me one day in which she saw my anxiety reflected in my face. Nevertheless I asked her many times, if perhaps that proof could be provided sometime. One night Li A had informed me that she knew of another person who had had an experience similar to that of mine. He was a man who lived in Chicago. That was all she would tell me. I argued that I didn't know if I would be able to go there, thinking of my work, my time certainly being saturated in the laboratory at the university. 1. Li A gave that man's name as one Thomas Haskins. You want her proof. I know that you will go. They will ask you to go. She asserted this in a manner that left me with no doubt. It would require much time for me to solicit permission to absent myself from the laboratory, or to leave my work to anyone with sufficient capacity to continue the labors I had initiated. Nevertheless, my life, since knowing Li A, was overfilled with surprises. 1 month after our conversation, the rector called me to his office and gave me this notice. Doctor, we have selected you to represent us in the annual conference on social dynamics that will take place in the city of Chicago. I would represent my country precisely in the place that Lia had selected for a very special appointment. Two. The professor immediately recalled the conversation about proof. Here he suddenly had one of his many proofs, but it was for him alone. He would never be able to convince anybody else that Lia had told him this in advance. Inside of me I thought, this is an emotion I shall always enjoy. The idea of knowing that it would occur filled me with joy. Who would have thought that the rector might have overheard of my conversation with Lia? Something without precedent was happening in my life. It was as if this was the axis of a magic circle. I accepted the assignment to represent myself before the international body in the name of my country. But at the same time I accepted the right to meet another man, who, like myself, had had a similar experience of having known an extraterrestrial being. A slight gas in my stomach provoked a nausea in me upon arriving in Chicago. It was the sensation of something unknown that provoked a nervous reaction in my stomach. It snowed copiously, in such form that, after my arrival, the news said the weather had left a new record for snow for that year. In the center of the city, the thermometer registered 22 degrees below zero. It was already night when I registered with the administration. The heat inside was pleasurable. The climate conditioning functioned marvelously well. Once inside my room, absorbed, I pressed my face to the window, abstractedly observing the slow fall of the big snowflakes. A beautiful spectacle for me. I watched the going and coming of people I did not know. Races mixed among themselves as if in a swarm in an urban area of impressive dimensions. People coming from diverse parts of the world surrounded one another. So close physically, but all seemed indifferent to each other. 3. Our indifference to each other as compared to the ET's concern for us always overwhelmed Professor Hernandez. I put on my overcoat and a scarf and decided to go out despite the severity of the weather. The cold was intense and my face froze in a moment. I walked rapidly to get warm. Soon I began to feel a part of this world. People walking by my side without taking notice, without speaking. Signs in English, scintillated in the falling snow. Voices lost themselves as murmurs in the winds that howled in the ears of whoever did not wear protectors like I. Nobody seemed to advertise that they were in a human world, inexplicably. Like other places, this city had also fallen into a routine of being, and made, almost by inertia, all that was there, by custom, seem understood. I stopped in front of a store. An interminable file of people with packages in their arms flowed by. I watched them pass like automatons. Soon I began to make a comparison between what must be the world of Lia and that which was of this planet which I called my own, without belonging to me. 4. The flow of profound knowledge was beginning to make Professor Hernandez feel a stranger in his own world. He felt akin to Lia in some strange way. She had hinted several times that he might be one of them, having incarnated in this world at this time for a purpose. Suddenly a question sprang into my mind: how did our world come to be as it is now? What was it that persuaded our humanity to saturate themselves with innumerable superfluous things on the altars of desire for commodities without feeling? Why invent machines that transport man, robots that replace the laborer, devices that isolate the conversations within the same family? I continued walking, and beyond, in a showcase, I saw a television turned on. At the moment there appeared news about a disturbance in Ireland, trouble in Iraq, Iran, genocides in Afghanistan, Syria, Poland, etc. It amazed me. These people that right now were walking together with me, and who hurriedly came out of the store, and even myself, seemed totally unaware of those news reports. How had we arrived at this limit of indifference before the pain and the misadventure? Where had we lost the tie, and from where had come the violence and the desire to kill? Is man extinguishing the intelligence of man, in such a manner that now it rivals that of the animals in bestiality? Just where have we lost the delicate balance that determines the point of convergence of sentimental feelings and of hate? I sunk my numbed hands into my pockets and continued my walk in the snow. Soon I remembered that upon arriving at my hotel they had advised me not to go out after 6 in the evening, and that if I did it was at my own risk. I was not afraid. Suddenly, for my own security, I gave up having any valor. The violence was a new form of manifestation of being, as was the music of the tango in its time, and the Beatles in the 60s. I noticed, by the number of persons that passed me, that even the danger of an attack had been adopted as some daily thing. Where do they all go? That same man perhaps hoped that something or someone would make a change. The hope of a tomorrow was perhaps the only way which he could resist the vicissitudes of life. I stopped on a corner, stood against a wall and with great difficulty lit a cigarette. My hands shook. Would I be better in the morning? I thought about my meetings with Lia. I knew that from then on I would be noticeably sensibilized. My conversations with her had worked a transcendental change in me. It was as if suddenly a veil had been rent, showing the nakedness of a latent reality. Threateningly, I knew that my life was divided into before and after Lia, and that all that had occurred after my first encounter with her had produced profound repercussions in my state of spirit. Inexplicably, I no longer saw myself in this world as an individual being, ego-centered. No, now I placed within what I truly am, only the smallest, almost infinitely small, cellular part of an organism called humanity. To my mind came the possibility of being that organic part that had been invaded by cancerous cells. Could it be true that the world is on the point of succumbing? I could not know. On this point Lia had been discreet. She had advised me of various dangerous situations, but she did not answer when I asked her to tell me if we would survive into a future not beyond the end of the world. I felt, nevertheless, something inside of me, like an agitated sea at times, or like a sky at the beginning of a tornado. I intuitively felt something that I could not decipher. For the moment a change had come over me. Now I was more receptive to things that previously I myself had repudiated. Now it was different. My great longing was that all of humanity could experience the same as I felt when I saw the stars or the moon or the great infinity. I wanted to transplant in each one of those around me the concept that Lia had projected, concerning a world full of peace, where the people that inhabited it would profoundly respect life, where the most brilliant of scientists is no more than the most modest of its inhabitants, in a world whose principal quality is the value of sentiments, of simplicity, of humility, of honesty. In short, that range of virtues which on this planet have been put aside. 5. The professor is coming to know what the true meaning of love is. I know that I am speaking of an utopia, but is it not the falsehood of the manipulation of the atom, with all its virtues and defects, as well as with the neutron, the neutrino, and the proton, to cite only some, lurking in a world that is becoming ever more violent? I see through these things, trying to find the good in each one of them, analyzing the situations at a world level. And I see with sadness the great human errors that affect thousands of lives of innocent human beings, whose unvought was to have been born here on Earth. Lia, I said inside of me, I want to shout to myself that I am living only a nightmare. I can observe my movements and I am aware that the ultimate fiber of my being moves through the urge to live. Why? Why? What is it that you have done to me, Lia? Why not, instead of sensibilizing me, didn't you harden me to the end that I could adapt to the crudeness of this world? Why not, instead of coming to me, didn't you make me come to you, to your world, to your galaxy? Lia, you have come to me knowing all this accumulation of uncertainty that I drag along my road. You have tried to open my eyes by transforming that which blinded my mind. You have opened a window into the unknown, and I, the ignorant, the incredulous, after looking out, doubted that there would be anything there despite having seen with my own eyes. I don't know if it has hurt me or benefited me. I do not know how much man himself does not know, or whether to live will prejudice him or will benefit him. You have involved me in the same vortex of feeling, coming to make me love life, but I am left with one simple question: how to live it. I don't know if as man I am now within a labyrinth, or if the labyrinth is immersed within me. Lia, after all you have given to my life, I am today in a dilemma. Perhaps it would have been preferable to ignore all that you have put before me, or perhaps I should have opted to remain in doubt of the knowledge. I know that apart from you yourself, later, exactly since that first circumstantial moment in which I met you, I have not been the same. With frequency I consider myself common, sensible. What have you done to me? I believed in the past that my life had been rich in knowledge, but you, with all you have told me, have enriched the present and belittled the past. All has now taken on a strange shade to the eyes of others, but beautiful and fascinating in my view. 6. The professor has gone past the point of being able to communicate his new knowledge to his colleagues. He knows they would never believe him, and might even turn against him. Now I know that there exist as many galaxies as worlds in the universe, and that many of them are populated by intelligent beings. Lia has told me so. That enormous plurality of worlds could be equal or more beautiful than the Earth, the planet on which I am now. But for me, having been born here has been one great adventure. What am I going to do with all this she has left me? Disseminate it or save it for myself at the pain of losing my mind? Now, as I try to see through the eyes of my own world, I do not know how it will come out to the last fiber of each human being. It all seems insensible, cold, and nevertheless it is not, because the life that has emerged from that is indescribable as a marvelous fusion that springs forth from nothing and, for the same, in its way, this life of mine, is precipitated towards the same intangible point from which it started. Is that the destiny of man? What will happen in the days to come? Lia, come back and take my hand. On doing this, inside of me will vibrate the words, I love you. 7. Because through this platonic love I feel for you, I have been able to love humanity intensely. I believe I have now discovered your legacy, love. It is the same love that converts a hurricane to a light breeze and provides the rains that wash all the stains from the soul. Love is what makes possible the saturation of beings on the planet, the love that survives in the tempests of an angry sea. I know that you are nearby, but the dimensions of this love frightens me. When you spoke of the manifestation of matter as something much more than what we are aware of in our world, you had good reason. I asked you at that time, where did man come from? And your response was, the being is ethereal, invisible, is strong, grand, and powerful. It is pure energy in spiral vortex. As it has total polarity, it can be found in its antithesis, for it is then that it manifests as matter, taking on this aspect as a garment. The ethereal being then can learn to laugh, to cry, to shout, to feel, sing and love, but the finality of matter also is known to destroy. Yes, Lia has said to me through words of profound content that I am a man more tailored in an interior than much of humanity, implanted with something indescribable which is as fantastic as incomprehensible. 8.7. One can imagine the feelings of Professor Hernandez's wife upon reading passages like this in his diary. She has no basis for accepting the extraterrestrial nature of these contacts, and is left with no alternative but to believe that her husband of so many years is being taken away from her by a clever Earth woman. 8. Here is another reference to a greater soul development for Professor Hernandez than most of his contemporaries. Many UFO contactees are eventually told that they have voluntarily incarnated on this planet at this time to carry out a specific preordained mission. This was noted in the cases of Edward Meyer and Edwin White, as well as with a great many others. How did I come to love you? How bold of me to feel love for you? Do I love you for yourself, or for what you represent, or for admiration, or for all these things together? I was surprised. I had withdrawn from this world by means of my imagination. Within this city and its inhabitants and its traffic was a fictional world such as has been converted in each one of the great cities. Suddenly I returned to observing the people. Races mixed among each other walked their wide avenues. I was only one point in that city, a minuscule drop of water in an ocean all the time becoming more turbulent. Suddenly I noticed the insignificance of each life. The dimension of matter was infinite, but the power of the mind was immense. The only thing that was in accord with all of this world was the contempt that man feels for himself. The other day I looked in the telephone directory for a name, Thomas Haskins. There were too many names like that. I closed the directory. I had the time measured to attend the opening of the Congress. Those first days it was impossible for me to visit Haskins. That Saturday in the evening I had time. I asked the porter in the hotel which road I should take to get to what seemed to me to be a suburb of the city. The porter arched his eyebrows and told me not to adventure in that place, and if I did, I should return before dark. I boarded a taxi and set out. Thomas Haskins himself opened the door when I rang the bell. After a brief preamble, he invited me to enter. His apartment was very modest. We talked a good deal. We had many things to discuss. For the first time I described to someone else my experiences in full confidence that that person would understand. "Did you have this experience very long ago?" I asked. "More or less 10 years ago," he answered. "And what did you think at that time?" I asked. "That all was unreal. It seemed as if suddenly my own psyche had me in a trap. Now I have become accustomed to it." "But, did you believe from the first all that they told you?"
"Yes. I believed that something very exceptional had occurred in my life."
"Tom, was it a man or a woman?"
"Man."
"His name?"
"Hamill."
"Did he tell you where he came from?"
"He told me his planet was Ainstra 9.
That was what it sounded like, more or less."
"9.
This is a remarkable confirmation that Tom's extraterrestrial contacts were with the same group of ETs as Hernandez. Have you ever thought of transmitting to anyone all of that experience?" "This," he said, indicating the color of his skin, "at times is an impediment. The sepia color of his skin would not be any impediment to live, or to breathe, or to sleep." Nevertheless, I said nothing. "Tell me, Tom, did they invite you to travel in their ship? Does this have some importance to you?"
he said. He looked at me at length. He drew in the smoke from his cigar and, exhaling with each word, said, "Yes, I have traveled in their ship, but that I save as though it were a dream. They took me out to observe the world, and I could see through a sense of the passage of the comet Hoy."
"Did Hamill tell you anything about that?"
"About what?"
"About the comet."
"Oh yes," he said. He closed his eyes a moment as if evoking some passage from his life and continued, "When I was little my mother prohibited us going out whenever there was an eclipse or when it was said that a comet was passing."
"Did you mention this to Hamill?"
"Yes, and he told me that our ancestors thought that comets were a powerful source of energy. They thought their passage through the universe was damaging to all they encountered, like they were gigantic aspirators that absorbed many of the gases they confronted distributed throughout the universe. These gases frequently are highly dangerous to the life in space, and many of them feed themselves on energy." He said that a comet absorbing energy, and by the force of friction as well as the enormous concentration of particles, becomes saturated and some of the gases trail away to form the tail, and in this manner scatters the flow, so to speak, of these gases already highly contaminated with others. Such, upon being scattered in space, are attracted by planets that are relatively near their path. Here they encounter the gravitational force of the bodies. The velocity with which these particles travel makes them arrive more rapidly than the others which swarm in space. Those others which orbit in the universe will be thousands of years later in arriving, while the particles of the comet are sent at extraordinary velocity. Like they were launched from a catapult?"
"Oh no," Tom said. "Such a comparison would be a coarse joke. We can call it friction for its accumulated de-energizing effect, and that would be a more adequate term according to what Hamill said. Does this present any danger for our planet?"
"Oh, of course it does," replied Tom. "The atmosphere of your planet attracts all these disseminated particles, and later they condense into clouds. The rains carry that to the ground, and then it is absorbed into the lakes, streams, and seas, and primarily in the harvest crops. The air also takes part in the distribution of these particles. In time, that contaminated air comes into contact with some 30% of the inhabitants of our planet. Isn't that pretty dangerous for our humanity?"
"Yes, that is what Hamill told me. He also told me that space is saturated with dangers and that we still do not know the extent of that harm. He told me that if the scientists of Earth would unite to bring exact knowledge together to expel all of this kind of particles toward the outside, perhaps within 20 years we would be in a position to do it and thus avoid greater contamination of the planet."
"What else did he tell you?" He told me that my planet was beautiful. A planet full of life, he said, and that it throbs in the field of the universe as a chosen planet, nevertheless having deteriorated to a level such that it no longer offers security for life. Nor for a long time has it offered such despite the advances of its sciences. There was silence. I continued reflecting on the position of Haskins. He was a man of color, unemployed, and living immersed in all kinds of racial, social and economical problems. The violence was clearly advertised on the street where he lived. Groups were stationed on the corners, staring with offensive curiosity at whatever passer seemed to them unknown. It was obvious that Tom had been selected from hostile surroundings, as one would pluck a rose from among poison ivy. He convinced me, by his words, that he took this experience as something rare in his life, but not transcendental. "Have you done anything to publicize those experiences you lived with Hamill?" I asked, breaking the silence. "Yes, but for me it was difficult." "Not even a printed article?" "No. But look," he said, taking out a small booklet of 50 pages, "this booklet I was ordered to make. There was only one printing of 2,000 copies. He had dedicated all of his savings to the edition. I knew that it had taken a great effort to do this. Thomas Haskins was brilliant, intelligent, noble, and above all at peace of mind with himself. He seemed an exceptional man, drawn from an unhealthy environment, but what impressed me greatly was his resignation before the means in which he had to live. He believed that his friendship with extraterrestrial beings was not going to improve his actual situation. I understood completely what he had wanted to tell me, but the revelations that pertain to us as terrestrials charged with looking for an improvement in the world level must be directed towards something more profound. At least that is how it seemed to me. Reclining on the bed in my hotel, looking toward the ceiling, I discovered what I did not see before. It occurred to me that before me was opening a tiny breach in the wall of confusion. There would be obstacles. If Thomas Haskins had had the courage to publish a book by himself, I also must do so. My conditions were different from those of his, because I would have to consider that I would be delivering, through the offering of my memories, my prestige as a tenured professor as well. He was unemployed and his name was not well known. I held a position of high responsibility at the university, and it was by means of this position that the rector had selected me as the representative of my country. All that I was planning would change what I would have to do. Was it worth the pain? At that moment I wanted to declare myself the winner without fighting. It cleared up in an instant, and in that same microsecond of time also, it occurred to me that material values counted for nothing before the truth. To me had been brought the proposition of bringing to light my conversations with Laya, but would it not be sufficient to sign the inscriptions with the word peace for all who would understand what I proposed? No, I felt, that is not the way. The thorns that would come to me when the skepticism emerged must be accepted. I myself had been an intransigent skeptic. I could imagine the mockery, the doubt, and the sympathetic chuckles. I could see myself then in a swamp and slowly sinking. I returned to an exciting day in the Congress, still having the volume by Haskins in my hands, but I had already arrived at a solution. I would try Lyar's proof, and, though my prestige was at risk, I would speak to whoever would listen to me about Lyar and her presence in our world, and her advice of an insecure tomorrow, the solution of which could only be found among ourselves. Repeat of notes, copy from TXT above. 1. Lyar gave that man's name as one Thomas Haskins. 2. The professor immediately recalled the conversation about proof. Here he suddenly had one of his many proofs, but it was for him alone. He would never be able to convince anybody else that Lyar had told him this in advance. 3. Our indifference to each other as compared to the ET's concern for us always overwhelmed Professor Hernandez. 4. The flow of profound knowledge was beginning to make Professor Hernandez feel a stranger in his own world. He felt akin to Lyar in some strange way. She had hinted several times that he might be one of them having incarnated in this world at this time for a purpose. 5. The professor is coming to know what the true meaning of love is. 6. The professor has gone past the point of being able to communicate his new knowledge to his colleagues. He knows they would never believe him, and might even turn against him. 7. One can imagine the feelings of Professor Fernandez's wife upon reading passages like this in his diary.